You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast on this Thursday, May 24th, 2018. I am your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. If you enjoy the show, subscribe to it. You can do so on iTunes or Spotify, and we'll deliver the show to your device each day so you can listen at the time and place of your choosing. Also, if you enjoy the show, give it a good review in iTunes. We certainly appreciate that. Thursday is mailbag day on our podcast, so we'll jump into the questions that have been submitted through the comments section of GangreneNation.com, and thanks to those who sent us questions, we'll try to get to as many of them as we can. Our first question, could Josh McCown serve as Teddy Bridgewater's backup? So I think what this question is asking is there a scenario where the depth chart is one Bridgewater, two McCown, three Darnold? And yeah, I think it's plausible. I think that for that scenario to play out, what needs to happen is, well, obviously, number one, the Jets need to not trade Bridgewater, which we'll see what happens. I'm not sure Bridgewater's a lock to be traded. I wouldn't be shocked to see him get dealt at some point, though, with Darnold in the mix. I think the scenario where that would play out is that if Darnold is just a guy they feel like needs a redshirt year, where if they feel like, you know, he does have some things to tweak mechanically, and there are some changes to this offense he's going to be running. He's going to be under center more. So if they feel Darnold would benefit more from just sitting on the bench for a year, I think that's the scenario, and that probably would be the scenario where they keep Bridgewater around. Now, typically, I think if you're going to have an open competition at quarterback, you're probably only going to have enough reps to give to two guys. So I would presume Darnold's going to be in the mix. I presume Darnold's going to be one of those two guys. So that would make it less likely. But I think what it comes down, it probably says more about Darnold and where he is and not necessarily the end of the world. Although I would expect Darnold to be one of the top two guys on opening day. I think if that situation plays out, that means that they just feel like Darnold would benefit from just taking a year on the bench to sit, which, you know, does happen from time to time with young quarterbacks. Our next question, what empirical evidence is there to prove Josh McCown would be a good quarterback's coach? And yeah, a lot of people think that. In fact, he was even offered a job in Cleveland about a year ago. If he was willing to retire, the Browns reportedly offered him their job as a quarterback's coach. And I mean, a lot of it is based on projection. Just like you project a draft pick, how good a college player is going to be in the NFL. You really don't know how good a player is going to be transitioning to coaching. I think there are certain attributes people see with McCown that make them believe he could be a good coach. You know, he's apparently pretty good around younger players, which is certainly that something that helps out in that area. I think the big thing is, you know, he's a journeyman quarterback, which means he's been exposed to a lot of different offenses, played in a lot of different offensive systems, learned from a number of different coaches. So he's absorbed pretty much everything. He's absorbed pretty much everything you could possibly learn. He knows every play that pretty exists in an NFL playbook. He's played in every system imaginable. So it kind of has given him a good base of knowledge to kind of figure out what the things he likes, the things he doesn't like. This has been a great training for him in a lot of ways. A journeyman who, like McCown, is a guy who makes an ideal coach from that standpoint. Is just he's so knowledgeable in pretty much any scheme that he could possibly run. So, you know, that kind of background in the game, I think, certainly could be beneficial. And again, you know, it's a lot of people talk about Chad Pennington. You know, Chad Pennington, who's a very smart guy, really solid quarterback. I was as big of a Pennington fan as anybody when he was around. And people talk him up for being a coach. Would Pennington be a good coach? I don't really know. It's just you're judging him based on attributes, you know, how they would transition over. So I think that's what people are thinking. Will it work out that way with a guy like McCown? It's tough to say. It's really impossible to say. We never know who's going to be a good coach and who's not going to be. But I think those are the reasons people suggest McCown as a potential coach. Next question. Does the Jets running back crew crack 2,000 yards rushing as a group? I'd say probably not. Now, if you look through the NFL last year, I think there were only six teams that rushed for 2,000 yards total. So that would probably work against them. Now, there are questions, how frequently are the Jets going to run the ball? Are they going to emphasize the run game more? There are some suggestions that one of the reasons that the Jets made their change at offensive coordinator was that Todd Bowles was not happy with the lack of an emphasis John Morton had on the run game. So maybe there will be some opportunities there. I think it's tough. I mean, again, you'd have to be one of the top rushing teams in the league. I'm not sure the Jets are. I like the Jets' backfield. I'm not sure the Jets are going to have one of the top rushing attacks in the league, though. I'm not crazy about this offensive line, either as run blockers or pass blockers. So, you know, I think it's tough. I think it's going to be tough to get there. I think the Jets will have a solid run game. I like the backfield. I'm not sure we're talking about a top unit, though, when we're referring to the backs who comprise this Jets run game. Next question. Is it unfair to expect Jamal Adams and Marcus May to be the best safety duo in the league next year? I don't think so. I mean, maybe best, you know, I'm not sure you can ever expect any individual to be the best or any individual group to be the best, but you know, you drafted Jamal Adams sixth overall. There are not many safeties who get picked sixth overall, and there's a reason for that, is that there are just not many safeties who make a huge impact in this league. And when you draft a guy at that position that high, that means you think he's going to be that rare safety who's going to be a big time impact player, a guy who's going to change the defense. So from that standpoint, yeah, I mean, I think it's very fair to expect Jamal Adams to be one of the top safeties in the league. I mean, that's the reason he went so high. And then after you pick a safety sixth overall, if you double dip and go grab a guy in the second round, to me, that's a sign that you think this guy's pretty special. This guy's got a chance to be a really good player. So, I mean, that's the reason the Jets drafted these guys. And I know you always want to put expectations low, but look, there's a reason the Jets drafted safeties in the first two rounds. There's a reason, first of all, they drafted a safety in the top 10. And there's a reason they doubled down in the second round last year. It's because they think these guys, you would presume, it's because they think these guys have a chance to be something really, really special. So I don't think it's unfair to have high expectations. Now, I mean, can you ever expect them to be the best in the league? No, but elite? Yeah, absolutely. You know, at the very among the best in the league, even if they're not number one right there in that discussion, in that category, absolutely, I think that's fair. I mean, that's what the expectations are for guys you pick that high. That's the reason you pick them that high, is that you expect them to have that kind of impact. You expect them to change their defense. So, yeah, I think it's totally fair, and I think that these guys both have a lot of potential. You know, I think for the most part, I liked what I saw out of both of them as rookies. I mean, they both had their moments where they looked like rookies, but I think you saw some potential there. And if they grow into the players they have the potential to be, I think they could be right there. And yeah, I think totally. The other thing I'd say is what they did last year were good for rookies. Now they need to take the next step. You know, they have to improve this year. They have to move into that upper echelon at the safety position. Next question. Will the Jets have two or more receivers each break 1,000 yards this year? I would probably lean towards no for a couple of reasons. Is, you know, first of all, as we discussed earlier, we're probably going to see the Jets lean a little bit more on the run game than they did a year ago. Second of all, you're talking about a rookie quarterback potentially playing some games. So I like Darnold. Look, you know I like Darnold, but I think, you know, whenever there's a rookie quarterback, there's probably going to be a little bit of deterioration in numbers. And third of all, it's something I alluded to on the show the other day, is I kind of like the depth the Jets have at the receiver position. I like the upside. So I think that this could be a passing game, a group of receivers where the ball spread out a little bit. And when the ball, you know, when the targets are concentrated, it's easier to have, you know, two guys go for 1,000 yards. But I could see the targets being spread out a little bit more with the number of players the Jets have at the position this year who have some potential, who have some ability. So I'd probably go with no for those reasons. It's not necessarily because I think this is a terrible group of receivers, because actually I do like this group of receivers. I'm not sure. The one thing I'd say is I'm not sure you have that game-changing player. I'm not sure you have that guy who is going to take, who you can run your passing game through. But this is a very solid group. I like them. But part of that, you know, part of their depth, though, makes me believe that maybe this is not going to be a group where you'll see multiple 1,000-yard receivers. Next question. Who will be the most exciting player on defense, and who will be the most exciting player on offense? How about on defense I go with Adams? I'll go Jamal Adams, and I'll go out on a limb and say that, you know, he breaks through this year. He makes a big step forward. He's just going to be a fun guy to watch. Safeties who cover a lot of ground, they're fun to watch because they make plays. They make all kinds of different plays. You know, sometimes they're blitzing, they're getting sacks, they're hitting the quarterback. Other times they're dropping into coverage, and they're They're picking balls. I know Adams didn't have an interception last year. I know that was one of the criticisms of Adams, but you know they're making plays on the ball, breaking up passes, picking passes off. You know they're covering receivers. They're flying out of nowhere to save the day when somebody blows an assignment up front. So you know if Adams plays to his potential, he'll be an exciting player to watch. And on offense, I'll look to the receiver position, and I think that's Robbie Anderson, because I think you know the Jets have a home run hitter on this offense, and that's Robbie Anderson. And you know he really emerged last year as one of the better deep threats in the NFL. It's a guy who really took his game to the next level last year. Will he take his game to an even further level this year? Well, I don't know, but even if he doesn't, you know, even if he gives you something similar to what he did last year, he's still, again, he's a home run hitter. He's a guy who's going to make big plays, going to make big splashes. He's going to impact games a lot. And those kinds of guys, I think, are very fun to watch. So if we're just talking pure excitement, I'm going to say Jamal Adams on defense. Robbie Anderson is my guy on offense. Next question. Will the Jets have a top 10 defense? And with all those high draft picks, should the Jets have a top 10 defense? I think what's tough is that you don't have the talented edge rusher you need. So I'm not sure where the pass rush is going to come from. And while I don't think this is a terrible, terrible group of corners, I don't think it's a top group of corners either to help cover for that. So I go with no. With all those high draft picks, should they? I think, you know, it's a fair expectation to have. I mean, I don't think it's a crazy expectation to have with all the high draft, and not just the high draft picks, you know, the high-priced talent when you're talking Trumaine Johnson, who the Jets made one of the richest defensive players in the NFL in the offseason. I mean, I think, you know, you look at the early draft picks, and it's not just first-round picks, Marcus May, second-round pick. You know, you have, I mean, this regime has drafted a first-round pick at all three levels of the defense. Leonard Williams on the defensive line, Darren Lee at the linebackers, Adams at safety. So I think it's reasonable. The big free agent splurge this year was Trumaine Johnson. I mean, you'd hope there was enough talent, when you look at the resources expended. But and also when you talk about the reputation Todd Bowles has for scheming, I'm not sure it's there though. So I would say, is it a reasonable expectation? Should you be upset? Should you wonder why the Jets don't? If they don't, yeah, I think it's fair to. Will they have one? I'm not sure. Next question. Do you think the Jets should give Pryor a look at kick/punt returner? So I'm guessing you're talking about Terrell Pryor. I don't see why not. Look, I think you give everybody a shot and see who sticks there. I think you enter this with an open mind. I think the return spots have been an Achilles heel for the Jets for a number of years. So I think you try everything. I think you give everybody a look in practice, see who takes to it, who's capable of securing the catches first of all, how they look in preseason games. I think you open that competition up far and wide, though. I don't see a problem with that. I think that's, you know, I don't think there's any harm in at least taking a look at it, you know, seeing if a guy can handle it in practice, and then if he can, move forward from there. And our last question, what are reasonable expectations for a draft class? Not necessarily in year one, but all over the course of their careers. What is a reasonable hit rate to expect? I bet that on average, less than 2 out of 7 picks turn out to be average or better starters at their position. You know, I've read a number of articles on this through the years, and there was one that was written in Forbes a couple of years ago, and they took at one specific draft class, and they looked at guys who started at least 80 games, and the findings were rather striking. The first round, they about 2 out of 3, 67.5% guys started at least 80 games. Second round, that fell to 33.8, so you're talking 1 out of 3. Third round goes up a little bit, but still 1 out of 3, 36.3%. Fourth round, it dropped from 36.3% to 6.3%. So really the top three rounds are your best shots at landing decent players. And then it's kind of just, there's almost a lottery once you get to round 4 and beyond, which shows you why it's smart to trade down in the later rounds, as I frequently say. So, I mean, those are the odds of hitting on players. Now, you certainly want to be better than average, though. You know, just being average, I don't think is something that you strive for. You want to be better than average. So, you know, I think you have to look beyond simply starters, because you also have to find minimum wage players who can fill roles for you. You need to find role players, and those are guys in sub packages. Those are guys who can handle backup roles. Those are guys who can be special teamers for you. So I'd say, you know, for me, I've always, and this has never been scientific on my end, so maybe I, you know, maybe if I haven't crunched the numbers yet, you know, maybe that changes if I when I dive deeper into it. I've always felt like, you know, two quality starters and three good role players would be what I would want to get out of a draft class. And that, to me, that's a good draft. That, now, that's better than an average draft class, I'd say. But that's what I think is a good draft class. So that's just my – that's very unscientific, though. That's just kind of my viewpoint on it. Well, thank you for all your questions. They were all great. That'll do it for today's show. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy the show, iTunes or Spotify, please subscribe and leave it a good review in iTunes. Hope you have a great Thursday. We'll be back tomorrow to close out the week.